There he is.
I'm not late. You're just early.
Yeah. For once.
Yeah.
There you go.
I like this ribbing of anyone who's 30 seconds late is officially on blast.
Exactly. That's the way it works.
You're looking, good today, Mr. Broberg.
Oh, thanks. You are per usual as well.
Is it? Have you got a new camera or something? Why do you look so good?
I'm just beautiful, man.
Okay. Hey. I'll roll honestly, with that.
Honestly, this is such a COVID thing. I don't normally like kind of dote on myself this way, but like I grew my hair out longer and it's been mostly longer and I started actually keeping it longer and I'm like, curly hair is kind of cool. Like I have naturally pretty curly hair and I'd say like Matt Stratton-esque, though he wears it very well and much longer. Mm-hmm. And I dig it. It's fun. I feel like looks good. And I also had a donut before this, so maybe I'm just donut glow.
Everything's coming up, Milhouse.
Milhouse.
I do like your hair, the length and shape that it is right now. Looks good on you.
Thanks, man.
This is a very visual medium.
Always.
So I think our listeners are going to get a lot out of us complimenting you on your hairstyle.
Yeah.
They so appreciate actually, speaking of visual changes. Mediums.
Yeah, yeah. Show me.
Do you all see that looks really cool.
Oh, that looks so cool. Hold on, I gotta screenshot that. It's just a floating piece of chicken.
Yep.
I love
in the Austin skyline.
Hang on, there we go. I'll turn it off. So I made that chicken sandwich I made.
Yeah.
Google Photos is like, hey, that's a really good photo. You should make a poster out of it. So I said yes. And they shipped me this cool little like hang up, like
it's beautiful. I mean, the chicken was beautiful before, but that poster, I mean, it looks like a nice framed piece of art.
It's pretty good, and like the framing's solid. Like it's got little plastic bumpers on the bottom, so that the like harsh bits of the back doesn't like scratch the wall. So I'm pretty impressed at the quality of the fittings.
Out of curiosity, how much did that cost you?
$30.
That's
not bad.
Really enough, reasonable.
Enough that you don't think about it. You just hit the button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Apple used to do that all the time. Right from what was that app like iPhoto? Like when you're flipping through iPhoto, it's like, oh, this is a picture. Do you want to make a picture book out of it?
Right.
And I think in like 2008, I ordered that as like a Hanukkah present for my mom of like a bunch of bringing me to college things or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But I always appreciate when Google steals from Apple because it's so often the other way around. So
well, Google has been doing it for a very long time.
Okay.
Yeah, like at least 5 years, Google's been randomly recommending things and like auto-sorting pets and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, they're natural learning. I meant machine learning around recognition is just so superior. Mm-hmm. It's nice when they actually put like user experience around it though. That feels like a rare gift.
Rare gift.
I have no response. JJ, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Just taking care of things here and there. I've had a pretty long week.
Deceptive.
Yeah, right. I had a pretty long week in general, so I'm not my chipper self, mainly because this is one of the last things I can do before I finish this wave of things to get done. And then I have a nice lull for about a week and a half before I have to pick up a bunch of other stuff again. So hopefully I'm excited to know that this is one of the last things I got to do before I can just focus on engineering.
I love how descriptive you are.
Yeah.
Things and bits.
There wasn't a single piece of information. I'm just realizing JJ's in spy mode this week, where it's like his goal is to consume information and to give you as little in return as possible.
Exactly.
It's working.
Making my way to becoming state senator one day. What can I say? I say?
Or a cast of Furious 17 as the spy tech guy. I can see
you. I can't drive.
I can't drive, but I can hack this mainframe.
Exactly. Why is there a mainframe here?
There's always a mainframe.
There's always
where they keep all the information.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah. Well, if you didn't know, this episode is 317. We've passed at the Rubicon of how many times that we've actually made this a habit. Isn't that kind of cool?
Happy so can 317th you, recording.
I feel like we need a BC, like a before Cote and after Cote, like a BC and AC, I guess. So how many of the three of us blabbered on about?
That number I don't have. Okay. I don't have that. I should probably get that number, but I don't.
Okay.
That's what I love about JJ. He is a consummate professional when it comes to his role as a statistician.
It's true. It's true.
Just always got the data right there at his fingertips.
It's just, yeah. He had a story in mind and he knew exactly how to tell just that story.
Exactly. Yeah. I do not deviate.
Happy path engineering at its finest. Exactly. Speaking of dumb things in the news, what's up with the WeWork guy trying to
how is he even in the news?
How is he relevant?
I thought he was dead. Broke? Like, shouldn't he have jumped from the top floor of one of his own buildings or something by now? Like,
seriously.
JJ, we can edit that one out. I'll leave it in.
Well, this is the round two of Idiot, isn't it? I thought this was a quote from some deep who replaced Adam Newman.
This is like a new WeWork person? This is like we replaced the old WeWork person with a new WeWork person who's just as bad?
Yeah, that's the point. That's the layers here. Okay, so to catch up people who have missed this just deliciously dumb quote of the week, the WeWork CEO said people who are most comfortable working from home are the least engaged with their job. And you can tell that the most important people or the most engaged people at work are the ones that are chomping at the bit to go back in the office. And this is not to be confused with the original asshole, Adam Newman, who basically used WeWork as a personal bank account in so many like incredibly harmful and immoral ways. This is the new guy who replaced him just recently in 2020 named Sandeep Mathrani, who I didn't know his name until he decided to put his foot in his mouth.
So he's the new man?
Hey, that's good. That's
indeed. Good. Indeed. So that, I mean, discuss. Let me quote it all for us just to cue it up. No one is saying they don't want to go to work. They are saying, I want to go to work 2 to 3 days a week, and I'd like to work from home a day a week. Okay, cool. So based on that, he's saying that people that just want to go to work 3 days a week, they're just probably not that engaged. They just want to for those other couple days.
I dare say his business relies on people going to work. Or am I wrong on this?
Are you saying they're confounding
a little bit of both? So here's the beauty of that. His business relies on people going to work full time who are full time workers out of a WeWork facility. His business also relies on people who do part time. Like some people do work from home, but they count going to a WeWork office and futzing around with their friends that work in a WeWork office as they work from home. So he gets both. Like he gets to like drink from both of those fountains. So that's why I think he's interested in that narrative around 3 days at work and 2 days not.
Makes sense.
But I do feel that he's nailed it on the head calling me a lazy layabout. I don't know about you all. I'm not going to judge you all. But like, I don't really want to go back to an office anytime ever. And I am a lazy layabout. So he's got me nailed.
Have you gone to an office in a while? Because every time I'm in them, all I do is talk to people and I don't get my work done.
Yeah. And... I no, I mean, so I haven't been to an office as an employee, like, in years. Like, even when I've worked, like, at Pivotal, I went to an office a few times. But I really went as a guest because it wasn't my office. Same with Blue Box. I mean, the only time I went to an office was when I was visiting the Seattle office. I was never there as, like, a day-to-day worker. I was there for meetings, or I was there for, like, a week-long session on something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess technically I had an office at IBM, but I went in so frequently that it took me a year to realize that they gave my office to someone else.
So you're saying you could have gone like another 14 without working before people would notice?
I probably could have.
A certain callback to a previous episode?
I probably could have. In fact, I should have tried that.
I'm really impressed you didn't.
Yeah. I mean, the last time I can remember going into an office and actually like getting real work done was back in my Dell days, when we, like, because we all had to be in the office at the time, we would find our corners, but then there was always like hacky sack breaks or smoke breaks that we had to go on. That was all just the social aspect of it. And sure. I still remember this one guy. He was always the first one to show up and always the last one to leave. So he looked like he was doing a lot of work, but he did fuck all the whole time. Like he was like the quintessential guy with a coffee that always like walked up to people and just started chatting about stuff that you were genuinely didn't give anything, like no idea what he's talking about. Bob from the other guys, right? Like he was that kind of guy. And I was just like, but the managers loved him because he was always the first person to show up at like 6 a.m. and then left at like 6:30 every night. And you're just like, this,
you're hitting on exactly the point, JJ, that like, this is a dog whistle to the concept of evaluating time as a metric of success as opposed to results in any given way. And it's for complete self-interest, but let's say the CEO of a company that's not trying to make money on you working in their office space said this. If your boss said something like that, like, hey, you're disengaged if you're not in the office, it's only measuring you by like the same metrics of the Industrial Revolution instead of like you being productive by some definition of productivity that is attached to a result. And I did that for years where I was the first in, last out type guy, because I knew that's what people were looking at in my early days in EMC. And switching to mostly remote since then has been really helpful for me, being like, oh, I got to do some meaningful work and like make sure people talk about that meaningful work, which will take hours in the day for sure. But am I sitting at the desk all day? Hell no. Screw you. That's not what I'm paid to do. I'm paid to get some sort of outcome.
Well, and it just means I have to now try and measure us on some sort of like modern useful metric, like, I don't know, lines of code.
Oh, no, comments.
You're such a monster.
Comments of code.
No, we got to do by event registrations or some.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Or page views or.
Yeah, right. Signups for clouds, eyeballs, maybe.
So,
there you eyeballs. Go.
Yes. But you only get one eyeball per person.
Yeah.
Exactly.
God. Hearts and minds, Paul. Hearts and minds. How many hearts do you have? How many minds?
Those are stars on GitHub, right?
Nailed it. Yeah. But vanity metrics aside, like, what abject garbage. Next.
Yeah.
What else are you all reading this week?
I mean, I feel like in a similar vein, there's been that like whole we are closed meme of like all these people deciding not to go to work because, you know, they're being treated like shit, and like random fast food shops and stuff having to put up the we are closed because nobody wants to work here signs. It's been interesting to watch a lot of fast food restaurants. There've been photos of that. There's like a trending thing on Twitter. You can kind of see the list of stuff. But one thing that really hit me was one of our local breweries here in Austin, Austin Beer Works. They posted on Twitter and said, we're seeing lots of posts about how nobody wants to go to work right now. We just want to share our experience. We have received over 60 resumes for a taproom bartender position we posted last week. Every applicant we've set up an interview with has shown up. People want good work. And then they went on to talk about the fact that they pay a living wage and offer benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what people want, right? And that's what these people aren't offering, but are also getting mad about. And also, like, you furlough a bunch of people and say, oh, well, if you don't like being furloughed, you should, like, you know, gain some skills and up your job. And then everyone went and did that. And now no one wants their, you know, entry level job, like lifting up crates and putting them back down.
Yep.
At, you know, the Port Authority or whatever.
Yeah, man.
And so now
and not got, to like, say that work's not needed. Like that's important work. And as a society, we've got to make a choice. If like how much money you make per job, like we like to say that's based on supply and demand and skill. Like, have you seen the skill of the CEOs that are getting paid
right?
tens of millions of dollars a year? Like, these are incompetent assholes. Mm-hmm. Yet somehow their salary since 1938 has gone up over 1,000%, while the average salary has gone up 18%, and the cost of living has gone up far more than is somewhere in between those two, depending on what category you're measuring. So it's just like we're setting up people for so much failure, and this is one of the outcomes. I found it really interesting looking through that I didn't notice this trend until you pointed it out, Paul, in the show notes, and a lot of people being like, lol, like I'm not gonna do this shitty job that it doesn't help me survive. Like there are other options these days.
Right. Speaking of which, I don't know why. I thought of it because it just showed up in my Twitter thing as I was going through the Twitter moments for that theme. Don't fill plastic bags with flammable liquids like gas.
It's probably a bad idea.
Why wouldn't you do that? Question, Paul. Like, why, who are you? Like, why you're going to tell me I should wear a mask now too?
Why are we having a gas shortage?
Really lucky to be in front of this gas pump right now. And I don't need to go all the way home, but I have this plastic bag. Of course, I'm going to fill it and take it home to make sure I don't have to worry about the shortage, right?
Right. So what caused this? Like a few days ago, all of this like nonsense about like a gas crisis came up. I don't think I saw what's causing it. What's causing this gas crisis that has everyone filling up plastic bags in the trunks of their car?
The oil hack?
Was that it? The pipeline hack thing?
So yeah. I've got a causal chain from that pipeline hack. Basically, caused a bit of a panic, maybe even a short in supply. I didn't actually look into this in detail. So there's an expectation that there'd be a lack of gas available, and then a bunch of really unintelligent or, you know, it's a dick thing to say, but yeah, some pretty dumb people are putting a lot of gas in a lot of very insecure containers right into the trunk of their car. Like, could definitely explode. It is a flammable liquid, if I need to say that out loud.
Not just that, but it's a solvent. It'll
break you through
it'll
it.
Melt. Oh, right. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't even get to that point. Like, of course it's going to eat through the plastic, but like they're also pouring it right into their trunk where like you're not grounded. Like you could cause a fire on contact with some static is what I'm the first risk. But well, like, do you want to explain solvents real quick?
Well, I do. I want to throw in real quick though. Real time. The Hill just reported that the pipeline is fully restored like just now. So this was a run on gas pumps. It was completely pointless and caused an actual shortage that was not needed. I truly believe people thought this was going to be the toilet paper thing all over again and didn't look, they just thought it was a commodity and just was like, oh, it's fine. Not spending the moments to realize that as we say, it's a solvent and an explosive that could pretty much kill you. So, you know, like, I'm sorry if you're in Charlotte, North Carolina right now, where you have 65% of your pumps are out of gas, but tomorrow you'll be fine.
Right.
Right.
Like wait a few days.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's probably some life-threatening issues where not having gas is a big deal, but all those people stockpiling gas in plastic bags are not that category.
No. And they don't realize gas goes bad also, right?
Well, like, I mean, it can take a couple of years for gas to go really bad. So, yeah.
I mean, if you bought two pallets worth of toilet paper during the toilet paper rush, you're probably going to be sitting on that for a couple of years. Right. Unintended. Unintended.
Oh, you did it on purpose for once. Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there is very real risk to people not being able to get gas. At the same time, my close friend's parents were stranded on their road trip up to visit him after his wife gave birth to their first kid. And they're just like, we were mid road trip and there's no gas anymore because everyone took it in trash bags for some reason. So they're just staying in a random town. Yeah, it's almost like we all depend on each other, whether we like it or not. So we have to kind of have rules for depending on each other.
Yeah, speaking of gas shortages and stuff, it just made me think about, so growing up in Australia, we have large portions of the country that are unpopulated.
Kangaroos. Oh.
And so sometimes if you need to cross that unpopulated section, there's no gas, because if there's no population, there's no need for a gas station, right? And so you'll see signs that are like last gas station for 600 kilometers. And you want to pay attention to that sign, because if you miss that sign, you get another 300 kilometers and then you could be in some trouble.
Yeah, you're officially out there. Oh, man.
I feel like I've never really seen that as a problem here, though, because we're pretty solidly populated. Like,
there's some spots.
West Texas, my friend. West Texas.
Probably some spots where you could go a couple of hundred miles.
I'm thinking out in Nevada going through rural Nevada, if that's not redundant. Like, I remember seeing a sign as like last got gas for 200 miles or something. Mm-hmm. Just like, okay, I better just top off just in case.
Between Austin and Lubbock, there's a couple of those stretches that I remember taking when I was driving up there. But I do want to talk about the actual hack for a moment that happened.
Yeah, that's technology. Sure.
Yeah. I mean,
so when we talk about like a pipeline hack, I'm usually thinking about like the software deployment, like build part of the CI cycle, right?
Yeah.
So there is actually some correlation between the SolarWinds hack, right? Was a supply chain hack. Well, right. This one was a ransomware hack that got embedded into Colonial Pipeline, if I remember correctly, their control systems. From what I've been able to piece together, basically it was some ransomware that got just injected onto their control systems, and they just ended up doing a full restore to get past that ransomware. But the interesting part is as soon as this was announced, Biden has yesterday signed multiple executive orders to start building some actual process around this. And if you dig into him, especially as a technologist, I got to say his heart is in the right place, but it's, again, like someone who doesn't live in technology. When you read it, you're like, okay, this is someone who doesn't understand technology, thinking this is how, what we could do to make this better, not realizing that, no, you need actual technologists who understand, like, you can't just be like, hey, Colonial Pipeline, why don't you like protect your shit? Like that doesn't work in this world. Like you have to build processes around this. You have to build.
That's detailed, JJ. Don't trouble us with details. Just protect your shit.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. All right.
I do think about like who gets to be consulted on that. And it's, you know, people that are often like C-level executives in the tech, and they might be in tech, but that doesn't mean they're relevant when it comes to understanding supply chain to build software. So I don't know. I don't know who got consulted or not consulted. I was reading up on that today. They mentioned open source about four times in the executive order and like their new requirements around it. And a couple prominent lawyers in the open source space were saying like, thank you, Biden administration, for making it a necessity for all companies to have an open source program office, because there's gonna be some serious risk to not understanding your licensing structure and like where you're, and basically to your point, JJ, your supply chain of this stuff. So I know that was said in a negative connotation, like a way to screw it up, government, but I honestly was like, I'm glad they're going to have an OSPO. Like,
but, that's the, but it's, at the same time though, this is also an executive order, right? So this isn't law. Executive order is different than Congress acknowledging that this is a problem and enacting a law. Whoever the president is next can completely remove this, right?
Yeah, because it's, I think it's worth differentiating legislation versus law. It is law in the sense that it is enforceable by the government to date, but it is not legislated. Therefore, like to your point, the longevity of it is very limited.
Yeah.
Right, but isn't that by design? You do the executive order fast to like shore something up, and then you let the legislature figure out, take their 2 years and 3 years of study and nonsense to like shore up and actually come out with legislature that actually does what's needed, but we're still somewhat protected in the meantime.
I mean, in a perfect world, yes.
Right.
But like right now, people are just going to be like, oh, cool, this is no longer an issue. Let's let Space Force take care of this for us or whatever. Right. And that's the problem, is that we're like there's so many things. Like, I'm getting flustered thinking about this.
So JJ, the answer to do nothing?
It depends.
Oh, you asshole. Complete your thought.
No, I'm not going to get it out. But the point I'm trying to get to is, without setting all the groundwork, I like to see that we're moving towards this, but the problem is it's not going to be enough. And because it's only going to be in the news cycle for as long as people have gas and fucking plastic bags, like, we have a much larger problem here. And this all stems back to like our voting machines and like all of this stuff comes together. And the problem is people don't see it as one thing. They see it as a lot of disparate things. Disparate things. Thank you. Yeah.
Desperate is how I was feeling thinking of that word. Disparate's the word.
Thank you. And it's frustrating. Like, I realize working at IBM, of course, you know, I'm like, well, IBM can have an answer or whatever, but I'm not even saying that. I'm just saying that we need some level of, we need an open source. Now it sounds so wrong.
Just let it out, man. This is a safe space.
No, it's not. It's never been safe.
JJ, you're the editor of this thing. If you don't like what you said, you can just edit it right out.
No, that's the whole point. I don't.
Yeah, we noticed. you said you need an open source. Like, you want a solution. I'm hearing that this is a frustrating to you because you're seeing a bunch of symptoms of what you see as like a systemic issue.
Yes.
I'm just curious which systemic issue is of interest to you, because there's a lot of fascinating underparts. And you know, something I've kept in mind as like the Biden administration's gotten closer to that infrastructure bill is, like, I've been thinking, is there a volunteer or like extra, like, outside of work opportunity to advocate for broadband across the United States? And like, I'm not the best expert on these things, but I recognize I know a hell of a lot more than the average human on like what you need and how to deliver it. Mm-hmm. Where I'm like, I want to help communicate that to people that don't get that, so that we build what people need. So yeah, I feel you, JJ, of like, I feel like we have so much skill to give, and there's such a misunderstanding of what's going on.
To play off of that, it's almost like an arbitrary gatekeeping to allow us not to walk in here as experts. Like, I have tried to spend this time to be like, okay, well, I understand some back end like broadband information, because I've had to debug this stuff and learn how to set up a POP and all that bullshit in my career, right? And I kind of understand, and I've done the research on how to set up some satellite, like actual, like runoff of actual satellites, internet access, right? Because of the ham radio stuff and all I've done. But because of the arbitrary, like, spectrum internet access that we have here in Austin, or all the random like major corporations like AT&T, they make it next to impossible for you to create that community-based internet access, which is exactly the answer for a lot of these broadband places to happen, because AT&T is never going to incentivize going out into the middle of, to run fiber out into the middle of, I don't know, wherever'sville, 1,000 miles away from the major pop. It just, that's not, they're not incentivized to do that because they're not going to make any money.
Right.
Right. But as a nerd like me, well, you know, give me a little bit of a budget and I could probably put a shoestring thing together to make something like that. You could drop it in there. Right. And make that happen.
But you could, like, so you couldn't do it where the monopoly is in effect, right? Okay. So where Spectrum, Time Warner, Cable, AT&T already are, you're screwed, right? Because they own the monopoly anywhere they are, effectively.
Yes.
But if you're talking about places there aren't people, that's like pretty much fair game, except, you know, it's going to be expensive and how are you going to find the funding and stuff?
But isn't that what they did like in Africa with the LTE phone or 5G or LTE mobile phone poles, I guess is the right word for it. You started popping them up all over the places because they couldn't run the cables to it. So they're like, well, LTE does enough down for people, right? And okay, maybe it's not great for up, but it's enough to be able to do like a Skype call. And
yeah, that so was like there's a lot of places that kind of skipped cable internet infrastructure and went straight to cellular and like wireless, and because they never had the money put into building out the actual cable infrastructure.
Yeah.
But they're kind of being forced to for cellular stuff because, you know, so critical that you get cell service to places.
But do you see my disconnect there though, where I'm like, well, don't we have an answer for this with the wireless and the cellular?
Sure. But system? But you can anyone that wants to can use 4G or 5G or whatever is their primary internet usage, as long as they have.
But
I mean, it may not be super performant, but it's there as an option.
I think the story I'm hearing is that like there's no public service, there's no public service option for something like a broadband internet connection, right? Or even like a, imagine the government owning cellular towers. And there wasn't like a free service you could use for cellular, but the tower exists. And I could see in that scenario, JJ being someone that amongst a collective is powering a volunteer service that provides you with a low cost cell phone service. Mm-hmm. Similarly, like just because they run fiber into, you know, bumfuck upstate New York where I grew up, like that doesn't mean that service has routers to connect to and has like DNS services and has LDAP and all the infrastructure services that we take for granted from service providers. Mm-hmm. I would love to see, like, you know, even if the government doesn't want to take on all of it, just to run the actual wire and to have connection points that people then can treat as a commons and like care for. Like,
that's what happened to the phone system. Right. When they started, like when the US government was like, hey, we need phones all over this. We'll subsidize Ma Bell at the time, I think it was, to run phone cables, copper everywhere. And that's how we got phones across the United States. Right. Hmm. And the history is actually brilliant. And it's weird that we haven't done it yet.
No, right? It's not weird. Dude, this is late stage capitalism. Like, we've decided that the public good is not for us.
Yeah, I guess
depends on which we. Yeah, I mean, as an organized body, so far we seem to be unable to get there anymore.
Yeah.
We now have people who just really push lies so that they can up their budget for a book deal. Like,
yeah,
it's definitely a thing.
Who actually reads these books? My question also is, who actually reads those books from those people that do that? Like, I'm never going to buy it.
Already believe what they are going to read. Like,
okay.
The kind of people who buy books at the airport bookstore.
Hey, I do that. Fuck off.
No, you don't.
I mean, there are good books sometimes.
You have a Kindle, don't you? Use a Kindle.
No, I use it rarely. I prefer physical books when traveling.
Really?
Wow.
Speaking of traveling, did you see our list of best cities for barbecue across America?
Oh my God. That made me angry.
All right. So this, I don't know what they are. This website called Chef's Pencil, which I don't even know what that means. It looks like it's like a news blog for like food industry folks. They trawled TripAdvisor restaurant reviews to build a map of America's best barbecue. And that works if like TripAdvisor is an authority and whatever, but this is just like random people on TripAdvisor. It's like, it's not even Yelp quality. Like Yelp's garbage, but Yelp still is a little bit better than that.
Yelp is garbage within a closed loop, right? Like I internalize Yelp logic so I can find good restaurants. You can't, a 3.5 star is equivalent to a 5 star, but the only thing people are complaining about at that point is how much it costs. Right. So below that, you can filter some stuff out. Anyway, I used to like Yelp a lot. It's showing, I get it. I gotta not die on that hill.
Yeah. So I feel like it's a good example of when like crowdsourcing data doesn't work.
Just because you have the data doesn't mean it's right.
Exactly. And so here's some examples. Number one city for barbecue in the US is New Orleans.
What?
Now they're obviously known for a lot of really good food. And I got to say, barbecue is not up there. And they don't even really claim to have a huge like barbecue thing, right? I mean, obviously they have barbecue, but they're not Texas. They're not, you know, North Carolina. They're not St. Louis, Missouri, right? They're not claiming to be a big barbecue capital. And so I think if you look at the, like there's Miami, Florida, there's Newark, there's Virginia Beach. So I think a few of them are kind of touristy hotspots.
Mm.
And then a few of them like St. Louis, Missouri is on there. Charlotte, North Carolina is on there. They're definitely barbecue places. Seattle, there is good barbecue is few and far between in Seattle. Like you'd probably have a better chance getting good barbecue in Portland, Oregon than you would Seattle.
I still remember when I used to fly up to Seattle and people would take me to taco and barbecue places because I think that that's what I would want. And I'm like, I live in Austin, Texas. I eat this stuff all the time. What you've put in front of me is a cry for help. I'm in Seattle. You should be sending me to like place with fish.
Seafood, right?
Yeah.
And so I actually want to touch on that in a second. That is a pet peeve of mine as well. But I think back to this, I think it's a good example of, I'm trying to remember who it was. It might have been Jordan Seisel, you know, from Logstash fame. Once basically said something along the lines of, show me like any graph that's like a heat map on a heat map of like whatever in the US, and I'll show you a population map and they will match up one for one. And he's kind of right. It's like anywhere where there's like high population or high, like in this case with TripAdvisor, high tourism is going to kind of be generally elevated because that's the hotspot for people that are going to TripAdvisor is high tourist spots. Certainly traveling. There are some exceptions, like TripAdvisor is pretty good in Japan, but in a lot of places, the TripAdvisor is all from like American tourists saying places they like to go. So they tend to end up being pretty tourist friendly places or places that are a little bit like the place they came from.
Mm. Okay.
So yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. And back to what you were saying, JJ, that drives me nuts. Like if you're visiting somewhere, I mean, maybe some people like it, but the last thing I want is that place to show me their version of the place I came from.
Yep.
You know,
well, I'll give you one, right? Like, if you want to show me because you're really excited to see if it's close to what I'm used to, absolutely, I'll play along.
Right.
But if you only take me to those places, you and right. I have very different views of what I find good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like in Singapore, like they wanted to take us to specifically a Texas themed steakhouse.
Oh.
And nice. Like, can we go to somewhere with like Singapore chili crab or something? Mm-hmm. Like, can we get, and we ended up getting a steakhouse and I had some appetizers and then went and found some chili crab because, you know, that's what I want to eat when I'm in Singapore.
Exactly.
Is like, or some like carrot cake, which in Singapore is a savory dish and doesn't have carrot in it. But that's another thing for another time.
All right.
So yeah.
Carrot cake.
If you're receiving visitors, unless you know that the only thing they want is cheeseburgers that taste exactly like from home, take them to something that is representative of your place, not trying to emulate their place.
So McDonald's.
McDonald's. You got it. Nailed it.
There you go.
I will not feed you barbecue. That's not true. It's funny. It's a terrible. I
want to try that barbecue place that you've got me. Is it Animales?
Yeah, Animales.
Animales?
Yeah. It's pretty good. I'm not going to say like they don't do brisket often, and I'm glad they don't, because if I ate that often, I would probably not go. Like, there's nothing like the brisket I've had in Texas by far. But they make some solid salt and pepper ribs, some solid pulled pork. They do some really good pork belly when they do that. So, and their burgers are legit when they do the big, they call them like McJordans or something. Like they, some knockoff Mickey D's, the owner's named Jordan.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But, yeah, other than that, like you're in Minnesota, so I'm going to feed you the best lutefisk you can find, my man.
Oh, yeah. Now we're talking.
I actually can't wait for you to visit. I'm pretty pumped about that.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. I'm definitely going to try and do something in July. There's a couple of things happening in your neck of the woods in July. So
yes.
I'm so
JJ, you're welcome as well.
Yeah, I haven't thought that far ahead.
It's not that far ahead.
Yeah, no.
Only a few weeks away.
No, I'm getting to the... Yeah, it's really blowing my mind. How are you guys thinking about travel?
I'm ready. I'm so ready.
Yeah. And your loved ones are vaccinated?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We still have some work stuff that makes traveling for work very difficult. And I don't know if that's being lifted anytime soon, but I'm so ready to travel right now. Which is why I've sort of figured that I've got a friend doing a thing in your way and up your way in July, and I've kind of decided to put that down as my, that's going to be like the first thing I'm going to do.
We're all just looking for excuses.
A little bit more time to see what happens with new variants popping up and other stuff, but I'm totally, totally ready. But you know what? I'm going to wear a mask every single second I'm in an airport, an airplane, or in random places with lots of strangers, but I am not going to wear a mask when I hug my buddy Matthew.
Aww.
When we're barbecuing something. Yeah. Yes.
Hey, I should bring a brisket with me.
Oh my God. Yes. I love that your checked luggage will be like meat.
I mean, I've done it before.
Yes, you have. And we'll do it again. Ooh, I should also look up beer you should bring me.
I'm not bringing guests to King.
Fine. Fine.
Fine.
Yeah, I'm so... We're my wife and I are celebrating our 5-year wedding anniversary.
Oh, good for you.
Thanks, man. And it's almost 10 years of being together too. So it's like it's a double significant one. We didn't travel before COVID or through last year. So this is going to be our first trip together in 2 years. And we normally do vacations often and have traveled the world together. So it's weird, but we booked a trip to Mexico and are going to go, like did as much research as we could on whether a place would you know, whether it'd be more of a burden than a benefit for us to bring our money to a place.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if we don't go, I mean, we're going to a pretty popular area and mostly just going to stay on a beach and try to feel like that's normal. It's just been such a while. Yeah.
Sounds wonderful.
JJ, you all talking about traveling or?
Yeah, actually we have 2 weeks in August that my kids don't have summer camp and it's before their school starts. So we have kind of mapped out a couple ideas and we haven't pulled the trigger quite yet on either of them, mainly because we just haven't bought the tickets. But I'm pushing, for us to find a all-inclusive resort kind of thing. Just because if you travel with kids, you don't really get to really enjoy yourself.
It's a trip, not a vacation.
That's exactly. Exactly. So if we can get an all-inclusive thing that we pay some money at and we don't have to think about it, and we can just kind of, that some of them even have like legit like activities for the kids to do.
Well, I was going to say, that's really what you're looking for. Like it's less the all-inclusive and more that having stuff for kids to do.
Yeah.
Hopefully even like daily organized, like drop them off in the morning, pick them up in the evening kind of like
club
stuff.
Exactly.
And I think it just happens that's a lot of the all-inclusive type places do that.
Yeah. So we haven't pulled any triggers yet. But I originally was hoping, but I got shot down on this idea. I've never driven to the West Coast from Texas. And I was thinking about just driving to the West Coast and going to Din Tai Fung in LA. And that was my only goal. Everything else was just like to like mess around in LA or whatever, but just to get to DTF and just get there. Because I've talked about it with my family multiple times because of my West Coast trips and all that. And we fell in love with soup dumplings from here in Austin. But I'm like, no. These are soup dumplings. We need to have these. And I almost got him to say yes. And then I got shot down. So
your whole family isn't DTF?
No. No. That's the title. I like it.
No, it's not.
No, it's a terrible title.
No. No. Yeah. No. You will have us rebelling from the show. We have standards. We just don't show them off.
Well, so let's wrap this up, because you know gotta go do stuff. I am cooking. Oh, so I'm reporting back. I did not make my chili oil this last week, but I did reorganize my pantry to the point where I actually know what I have now, and I bought a bunch of extra canola oil, so I should be doing the chili oil hopefully this coming weekend.
Nice.
On Saturday.
Canola oil?
Canola oil? No.
I guess, I mean, whatever.
It's just like, it's a neutral oil. It's a neutral oil, right? Neutral oil?
It'll be fine.
Well, give us more.
I don't know. I'm probably just showing my...
You just want me to peanut oil. You just want me to use peanut oil.
Only. I mean, I would love you to use like proper Asian peanut oil, like from H Mart or from one of the other good Chinese or Korean grocery stores.
Okay.
I feel like there is more flavor in it, especially the more, I think it's less refined or something. It's like much more orange color and does impart some flavor. As opposed to canola, which either doesn't impart flavor or it imparts its, I'm heavily processed and kind of covering up the fact I'm already slightly rancid type thing. So I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, whatever.
You do know. That's fair. I was thinking, yeah, it was either that or like, I don't know, like a light sesame oil as a base, as opposed to a, but I know sesame oil carries a lot of flavor on its own. But
yeah,
like,
you wouldn't want to use sesame oil because it loses when you heat it up, it loses a ton of its aromats and stuff and goes really.
Oh,
flat.
I didn't realize you heated it up in this process. I forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So JJ, You know the other thing you didn't do? You didn't make me a loaf of bread.
Yeah, shit, I forgot about that.
You were boasting about your challah, and then you didn't make me any. Yeah. How'd that go? Did I say it good?
Yeah, that was good. I'm pointing because it's a visual medium. that was good. And also, JJ should toss you one of those before you get in a plane to Minnesota. I'd love to.
That's a good idea.
Love the Chagir Challah.
There you go.
So I'm going camping this weekend. So I'm going to get a bunch of camp-friendly foods. And, you know, just the usual, like bacon, eggs, sausage, burgers. We're going to be fishing. So my hope is I cook less of the burgers and more of the fish we catch. But I'm also not one of those people that starves because they thought they were going to catch fish and didn't. So I'll tell you what, if a loaf of bread happened to hit my house before 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, that would be wonderful. Just saying.
Is that how bread works?
But yesterday I had a fun cooking experience. I got a Cornish game hen and I deboned it apart from the drumstick and the wings. So basically I spatchcocked it. Mm-hmm. So cut the backbone out. And then I removed every other bone, like including the thigh bone and the first drumstick bone, or the first wing bone. So it's this kind of floppy mess. Mm-hmm. And then I dusted it in a flour and then I put it in a Korean style batter. So it was basically roughly half flour, half corn flour, a bunch of seasoning and some baking powder and then ice cold water to make a really thin batter. I gave it a good dunking in that and then fried it whole like that. And it was so good. So I did like a first fry at 320, a second fry at like 370. And then I cut it in half, which because it was deboned was super easy. And then I made a quick like Korean style, like hot and sweet sauce. So it was some gochujang. It was the Korean chili powder flakes, which is gochujang. I can't remember. I'm pronouncing it wrong anyway. I'm sorry. Some honey, some a little bit of vinegar maybe. And I can't remember what else. I kind of was just making it up as I went along. And it was so good. So I dunked half of the chicken in that. And then I served it on, I didn't think far enough ahead to get some of the pickled radishes you'd have with Korean fried chicken. So I had some cabbage and I just did like a quick pickle on that and made like a bed of that for the chicken to sit on. And then I made a potato salad, it was kind of a Japanese style potato salad and then some mac and cheese as well. And that was a pretty delicious meal. I've got the other half of the chicken to eat tonight. The unsourced half, and I'm thinking I'm gonna chop it and turn it into fried rice.
Oh, fun. That sounds delish. Speaking of being shitty pronouncing things that you love cooking, I've made a really good batch of japchae, and I realized I've been pronouncing japchae wrong the whole time I've been talking about it. I don't know why. I heard somebody pronounce it japcha the first time, but it's an hard A at the end. And it's just a delicious, like clear sweet potato noodle that's kind of stretchy and chewy, mm-hmm. still has some density to it, and mixed with like a soy based sauce and seared and marinated steak. It's all chopped up, and I did carrots and farmer's market scallions, so like fresh green onions that were just delicious, Ooh, and I did something a little different. I wilted a bunch of Taiwanese spinach. So these huge, huge leaves. Just kind of chopped it up, wilted it down, mixed it through the japchae. And it just had that perfect balance of color and flavors and little rice wine vinegar to finish it off to give it some zing. Nice. On top of the brown sugar and soy mix that was in there, and worked out. It's damn good.
Sounds delicious. And it's like a dry noodle dish. It's not like a noodle soup, right?
Yeah, you're supposed to put just enough sauce where things moving around, but yeah, not like submerged like a ramen.
Nice.
But I feel like it has all the right elements to be as complex as ramen, of like you have to figure out what your oil is from your from your tare, from yada yada. It's fun. I like it. And I think it's supposed to hit the 70s this weekend in Minneapolis. So it's so it's officially not cold. And yeah, I'm going to probably grab a 5-pound slab of some trout and smoke that like I do, or like offset grilling effectively more than smoking. But it's so freaking good.
All right,
friends.
Well, I think it's time.
Talk to you all next week.
Yes. Bye.
Bye.